And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And again, a special thank you to Mitch Spean of The Bottom Line and, of course, Bob Kemsey of Akamai Group Marketing. I don't know if you guys heard this, but it was fascinating. Innovation is the key in today's economy, creativity. And, of course, this is a Green Roundtable starring Eric Koss and Frank Clementi. It is so nice to see you guys again. What was I out one or two times?
You were out once.
Once.
You were out flying around last time.
Yeah. That's right. I was out 2 weeks out of the month in June, all over the place. A lot of good stuff. The National Hockey League draft I was at, the award ceremony for the NHL. And, of course, I ended up in Alaska as well. So, no, it was
really? So you were visiting Palin?
Yeah, I was hoping to get a date. Sarah Palin.
So when it was 116 here, you were like the one place that was just beautiful?
45 degrees.
All right.
Man, it was nice. I liked it. I'm moving to Alaska. No, not really. But it was beautiful there. But I would recommend it. The scenery is tremendous in Alaska. I even saw the governor's mansion. Sarah Palin used to live there.
Uh-huh.
She was nowhere to be found.
Yeah, isn't she in Scottsdale now, or is that her daughter?
Her daughter. I think they bought something for the daughter out here. So we're going to try to get her on the show. Anyway,
yes.
So, guys, how are you?
We have our guest. Oh.
Before you say that, how are you guys?
Doing good. Yeah. Just trying to beat the heat out here like everybody else.
That rhymes. You're a poet and you don't know it. You have Longfellows to show it. Okay, so that was my joke for today. So we do have a guest, Eric. Before we do that, Eric, just say about 30 seconds who you are, what you do, and then we go to Frank Clementi.
Well, I'm Eric Koss. I'm owner of Koss Design and Build. I'm a licensed architect and contractor, and we specialize in green design and building.
Excellent. And Mr. Frank.
Well, what I do is sustainable organic landscape design, and people's backyards, or it could be a commercial project.
Very, very nice. And you guys have been on the Green Roundtable a long, long time. Cutting edge, though. It's important. Go green. Very, very important in today's world. No question about it. The carbon footprint is important to make sure it's the right footprint. Okay, Eric. Who do we have? We have a really good guest today.
We do. We've got another guest this month from This Old House. We've got Richard Trethaway. Hi, are you there, Richard?
I am. I'll introduce myself. I'm a middle-aged, middleweight plumber who's been on television for 32 years.
Hey, Richard. How are you? This is Dave
Doing
Isaac.
Great.
Yeah, you know, if you think about it, This Old House is probably like the first reality TV show.
I'm so glad you recognize it, meaning we consider ourselves to be the original reality, and the ironic thing is everything that is called reality is anything but nowadays.
That's true. It's everyone skirting reality.
That's right. So we are the home renovation show that doesn't cry at the end of it.
Yeah, that's right.
Unless they're tears of joy, right?
That's right. There you go. No, so I'm glad to be with you guys. I thought about you today because it's about 100 degrees here, 90 degrees here, and
oh, really?
We have something you guys don't get, which is that humidity thing.
Ooh. Yeah, that does add to it.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, you're in suburbs of Boston or Boston area.
Well,
right?
I'm actually in a hotel in New York. I got some business in upstate New York, which is a beautiful part of the world, but it's pretty hot. But I'm generally right in the Boston metro. We are all from there, and we've been doing that show since 1979.
Incredible.
Yeah, back in the day. So, you know, going back to pre-1979, how did you get into sort of the trades, the being a plumber, heating and cooling, all that jazz? What got you going down that path?
It indirectly happened in 1902. My relatives.
Well, you really are going back pre-79.
My relatives came down from Nova Scotia, my great-grandfather, and he became a Boston firefighter, but he decided to moonlight this new thing called plumbing. Plumbing was just coming inside the building. And he started a business in 1902, and then four generations later, we're still at it. You know, my father was the one back in 79. You know, we got this phone call from PBS in Boston saying, "Hey, we heard you guys are really good, but I got to tell you, we have no money. You work for nothing." And I remember I took the call. I was 22 years old, and I said, "Dad, there's somebody on the phone wants us to work for nothing." And he got on there, and he listened. He says, "We'd love to." And when he hung up, I said, "Why?" And he says, "You know what? All you kids have ever done is you've been raised watching Sesame Street," and you know, he believed in the PBS mission.
Yeah.
And he decided to pay it forward, and then he did it the first year, and he literally got so almost nervous, nauseous that. Yeah. After the second year, he says, Richard, you try it. You're too dumb to be nervous.
So, Richard, did you step right in and feel great about it and enjoyed it the first year?
I think what happens is, you know, I always realized that any contractor who's going to watch what I had to say was only watching it to catch me doing something wrong.
Yeah, find your mistakes.
You just have to release that, and then you got to realize that for as many people as there are like that, there is another whole generation in the skilled trades that didn't have the advantages I have to learn from the old-timers that worked for our business through all those generations.
Well, two, you were probably learning, you know, when you were just a little lad running around there. You didn't even know you were learning.
Oh, no. That's about, you know, I have great funny memories of holding the end of a pipe at the end of a power drive, they call it, and it caught my shirt and literally just pulled my shirt right off like out of a cartoon. Yeah, I learned.
You know, I'm curious, Richard, what has been the most noticeable change over the years? Because, I mean, I don't think you want to go back to 1902, but there's got to be things that have changed dramatically, right?
Well, the chase is always on how to simplify the connections. How do you increase the speed or the quality of the connections? When my relatives would have started the business, you would have poured hot lead and then packed it with, you know, or you would have cut and threaded every brass pipe. And then, you know, we've just seen one innovation after another in the plastic pipes, and even with the connections now with the water piping we have with PEX and, you know, no fittings inside the wall. But it's mostly how do you try to get a connection that will last with the least amount of time and labor.
Is PEX kind of the material choice for you guys on this old house when you're doing a replumb or a new job?
Well, it is. You know, it's not. We're never going to replace copper. There's too much in there, and it's too functional in tight spaces and what it does. But for many, many reasons, you know, PEX is a solid solution. You know, it just there's no fittings inside the wall, and it's a pretty time proven connection nowadays.
Well, tell us a little bit about the new project you guys have going on right now. I know it's kind of just hitting the airwaves probably as we speak. Right. I think it's been on a few episodes so far.
In 1720, what was around Phoenix? Anything?
Cactus.
The Apache.
An Apache.
I think the sun was still here.
Yeah. We are doing our oldest house by a year or two, which is 1720.
Nice.
And it's got that, you know, those cool older beams, and, you know, it was the house that was for five generations. It was owned by the Page family, and the Page family was interesting. Their family business was to carry the flag. There were coronets in every battle that happened around the French and Indian War and the American Revolution. So, you know, it's sort of like
it's a tradition there.
Like it was in Forrest Gump. Do you remember the Gary Sinise character in Forrest Gump? You know,
yeah.
My father died. My grandfather died.
Yeah.
These guys, they didn't die, but they carried the flag in every battle. So, and for us, it's not an over-the-top project, which we're very happy with, to not be. I think we want to be reflective of what the real times are out there, not to build some too big of a monster. We're going to just do a little kitchen addition and improve the second floor bedroom, master bedroom. So a little bit of restraint, which is good.
Are you going to be opening up any little old nooks and crannies in there with who knows what you might find?
Yeah, we've opened a bunch. We haven't seen as many as we hoped to. I mean, I remember some of the ones we did in Salem. We saw just newspapers from every era, and those are always fascinating archaeological digs, you know, just sort of thinking about, you know, the house is just this thing that keeps on getting fixed up over time, and you know, when you can find those time capsules, it's pretty cool.
In terms of what you're doing from sort of a mechanical and plumbing perspective, and this particular project may not be the best because it is a remodel, and you know, remodels, you kind of have to work with what you got,
right?
But what types of things are you doing today or on this project that maybe you wouldn't have done a few years ago in terms of trying to be maybe using a little more green building technology or just being more conservative or aware of the environment with what you're doing?
I was talking with someone the other day, and I can't imagine a better era in all of history to have been in the energy business. I mean, when I first got into the business, the average efficiency on a piece of heating equipment was 55% and 60%, and now with new condensing boilers and furnaces, we're getting up to 90%, 95%, and 96% of the fuel that you're burning are you using, but we're reaching the end of, you know, we have to now find ways to find alternatives that can supplement that, because you know, so geothermal is something that we haven't done as many on camera as we might have, because often our projects are so big, by the time you do three or four loop fields and, you know, three or four units in some of the buildings, it doesn't become cost effective for us. And but you know, we're always trying to use solar and alternative energy as much as we can, reminding people that there's no one perfect solution. I think everybody wants to have this magic bullet.
Yeah.
That they can just say, oh, just give me this magic thing. And, you know, the irony is, if I put enough solar panels on someone's house to do a reasonable and appreciable job to heat in a New England winter, it would have so much heat in the summer, you'd have to, you wouldn't know what to do with it. You know, you'd have to be heating the pool that's already too hot. So it's a delicate balance trying to sort of do the right thing, you know. And everybody wants to be green, as you know, but it has to still make fiscal sense as well.
Yes. Richard, I have a question. This is Frank. Has your company or thought of maybe a project in Phoenix, Arizona, going into the desert side?
You know what? We haven't done Phoenix. We did Tucson and loved it, and we loved the American Southwest. We did a bunch of Santa Fe, and we went up to Taos and visited there. So we haven't done Phoenix, and I don't know why. But, you know, whenever we do those stories, when we did Tucson, you know, we always try to chase the story about that the battleground for you and everybody in that climate is water.
Right, that's right.
You know, and
shade.
Yeah, shade and water. But we've also always tried to chase the water story, and the guy who started the This House franchise, Russ Morash,
yes,
was always a sort of a big thinker and wanted me to. So in my time with the show, I've chased down the fact that New Orleans has the second highest rainfall in the United States, and the entire city is below sea level. So let's think about that paradox. How do you deal with too much water?
Right.
And then we've chased the river of grass in Florida, the Everglades, how the water is collapsing back, so salt water is starting to move inland as they pull the aquifer down. And we chased it in Tucson. So I think the more that we can do to bring these issues to light to the American public, the better. I think it's part of our role, I think.
So do you think that Phoenix could offer that opportunity? I'm just saying, maybe there's a home or maybe there's a project here that we could put on your lap, and it could help bring out these principles.
Yeah, I would like, you know, we have a production team that decides where we're going to go. We have the two different shows. We have This Old House, where we do two major projects, one generally in the Boston area, and then the second one usually somewhere warm. This year, I don't understand. We're going to Providence, Rhode Island, which is not exactly warm, but we're going to visit that. But in the past, we've gone to Santa Barbara. We've gone to the places I mentioned. We've gone to Hawaii. So we've gone to a lot of beautiful places, and I hope someday to go to Phoenix. It's got that sort of look and feel of L.A. without the shallow people, right?
Absolutely. I live in Phoenix, and I'm from L.A. I got the. I'm sort of like both sides of it.
Jeez,
anyway, Richard,
don't quote me on that. We just finished a project in L.A.
I was going to say, you're not planning on doing anything in L.A., are you?
Well, yeah. We just finished, so they
well, it'll be a while.
I totally agree with you. And Richard, can you stay on a few more minutes?
Sure.
Great, because we're going to take a quick break now. And of course, we have Richard Trethewey from This Old House. Did I say that right?
It's close enough. Trethewey.
Okay. We practiced.
You're getting there.
Okay. And we'll be right back.
All right.
What if your house is on fire, you call 911? The firemen don't know what to do, the truck's got a flat tire, the water hose has a leak, they can't decide what to wear, and everybody wants to drive the truck. This never happens because they have a process, they follow it, they're on the same page. I'll help you put your fires out with a business process. I'm Barbara Haggerty, helping you mind your own business. 602-750-4518. Increase the bottom line now. Even a two-person business needs a process, and I specialize in small business. 602-750-4518.
Do
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the Green Roundtable starring Eric Koss and Frank Clementi. And they've nominated me to say your name again, Richard. So, Richard Trethewey. How did I do?
Oh, perfect.
I knew it. Okay, Richard Trethewey.
You know what? I got to tell you, having a name like that, the first day of school was always traumatic.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's always a long pause before they say my name.
And did people actually get it right? The teachers?
Oh, sometimes one out of three, but that's no better than Ted Williams batted.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. And he was a great baseball player. So Richard Trethewey, one of the stars from This Old House, we're so excited that you're on the Green Roundtable. And Eric, you have some more questions.
Well, I was just curious. You know, over the years, you've talked about all the different types of projects you've done, the places you've gone, L.A., Tucson, you know, a lot of places on the East Coast. When you know, people are submitting, or I'm not exactly sure how the process works, and maybe you can talk about that a little bit for, you know, how to get their home or be part of this project. But once you get down to the last two or three that you're like, okay, it's going to be one of these, how do you get, you know, an owner and an architect, or, you know, you guys as the contractors and TV producers, how do you get all these people to say, yep, that's the one?
I think we want two things. I think, one, we want the project itself to be interesting and viable, and I think we also want to be compatible with the homeowner, because this is an intense process. You know, the remodeling process by itself is a million decisions that come at way too fast a speed, and always the budget story. Well, when we add the compound of the television schedule, most of our projects, I will tell you, the Tom Silva does as our general contractor, they're generally year-long projects. We finish them in 6 months. And so at that level of acceleration, you know, there's just a pressure to make a decision and stuff like that. So we want to be sure that the homeowners don't melt on us. And, you know, to be honest, for 30-something years, it's been nothing but a handshake. It's barely been a contract. It's knock on wood, we've been lucky. And I think, you know, we've been delivering the goods for a long time, you know, just everybody on the crew, we're all real contractors. We know what we're doing. So it's a pretty good deal. A lot of people want to know the deal for the homeowners. A lot of the major material can get donated for promotional reasons. So you might get some appliances or windows and stuff like that. So, but they still have to pay for the labor and most of the project, and they have to pay also a tax on the retail value of the donation. The IRS figured that out.
Yeah, it was. But when you said you're getting a year-long project done in 6 months, I mean, especially a remodel project, that would be a huge bonus. I mean, really, any project, that's a huge bonus.
Well, not only does it get done, it gets done completely. They have a video record of it. The punch list gets finished. I mean, all the stuff that everybody complains about in contracting is, you know, the last two switch plates get put on the electrical outlets. You know, it's
For people out there, can you explain what a punch list is?
The punch list is the list of those annoying little things that the homeowner wants to have finished. The contractor means to get to it. It usually involves some money outstanding between the parties. And if the list doesn't get done, somebody wants to punch somebody.
Right. I always have to explain it to people that, no, it's not the list of people you want to punch by the end of the project. It's a little different than that.
No, it's the list of things to punch out and finish.
Now, you mentioned about you have to be compatible with the homeowners. How do you determine that? I mean, are people on their best behavior at first, and does it ever turn Any surprises over the years, or are you pretty much no?
No, I think we're a known entity. I think our production team is unbelievable. We are Thistle House. We have a producer, Deb Hood, who's amazing. On Ask Thistle House, a guy named Chris Wolf, and so they've got a sort of a sixth sense. We all sort of interview them too. So I think the prospects don't really realize that they're being interviewed, and we come in joking and looking. But you know, and we sort of give a thumbs up, thumbs down, and knock on wood, we've not been. I think it's been an amazing process. I mean, I still pinch myself 32 years later that we've done the level of projects. I mean, let's think about it, 32, two a year, 60-something, each one of the, it's 26 episodes a year. You know, we've got everybody's happy with us. As far as I know, I mean, everybody's happy with us. And we've also shown America how to do it right, meaning there's so much stuff out there is the propensity of these how-to channels. There's no guarantee, just like the Internet doesn't guarantee anything you're getting off the Internet is legit.
Right.
There's so much stuff that we roll our eyes about that the American public's getting, and we still feel proud to be able to be in a position to affect what America knows about building and, in my case, mechanical systems.
So are you saying that you don't think building a 6,000-square-foot extreme home in 5 days or less is the right way to do it?
I think it's dangerous. I think it's insulting. Yeah.
I've heard some stories about that show that I won't share here now. But
it's beyond just that. It's just in general that, you know, there's a million different outlets of experts, alleged experts, and it's hard for the consumer to get the sort of the right answer.
Yes. Richard, this is Frank again. I think that leads into a very interesting thing, which I think you have in mind, and that is books and instructional materials that actually would help people either do it themselves or demand quality from a contractor, or contractors would say, hey, I just read this book, and it's an opportunity for me to be a better contractor. So all those things probably play a role.
Yeah, I wish more people read books in those subjects. Everybody wants a two-minute video about everything in this society of ours, but nothing beats the clarity of a book that shows you how to frame or cut stair risers and all that stuff, and to do it right. You know, the interesting point about the contracting business. I mean, none of us were the not the best students, but we weren't the we were creative. You know, creative. So it didn't always meant you wanted to read books. You just wanted to work with your hands and find creative solutions. And so, you know, what also has caught my eye is I used to think we were just teaching the homeowner. And I've had so many contractors come up and say, you know what, I saw you do this thing. I didn't know that. And you realize that in this country, the vocational school sort of system has been ignored a bit over the last 20 years. You know, we're not given it the same attention that other industrialized countries do, like mostly Western Europe. So we're missing a generation of skilled tradesmen, and most of the people in the skilled trades, carpenters, electricians, plumbers, they're all in their 50s. And so we've got this sort of gap right now that is a very real issue, because you've got most of the housing stock in America is over 50 years old, and you're missing the generation that can fix it up. So,
yeah, I was just using the word gap in my mind when you said it, because how do you overcome that gap? Because how many people want to go into the trades? How many people say, I'm going to go to college or whatever, trade school, and you know, really do it up the way it should be?
I tell you, Frank, that one of the things that I think has come out of this major realignment of the world's sort of economies is that there is a whole bunch of people that came out of a four-year liberal arts degree thinking they would get a cubicle in a big company and haven't.
Right.
And I think that it's become much more chic to have to sort of coach people that this there's a certain independence you have if you have a skilled trade that no one can ever take from you. And it's never, you know, this mindset is sort of coming back to almost a 50s mentality that or even late 40s, that, you know, like cuffs on pants, that now it's actually not uncool to be skilled at fixing something.
Right. And there's more demand for that as products deteriorate and as they have to be remodeled and fixed.
How many parents have or kids are saddled with $200,000 college education bills and no job, and they could have gone a little bit of time and learned a trade that no one can ever take from them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Is this a break? What do you say?
No.
And, you know, over the years from watching the show, you know, home improvement shows are so big now. You see them everywhere, mm-hmm. and you've seen, you know, green and sustainable things pop up here and there. You guys have always been, you know, kind of, you know, like you said, you've been teaching people how to do not only how to do things right, but, hey, here's a new product or here's a new way to do something.
Right.
And that sort of gets tied into kind of this movement of building or being more green. Is that something that's just you guys have really focused on and pushed to do in terms of being more green? Or has it just been kind of your sort of your bigger overall culture? But that's what you guys do. You're sort of always trying to see what's new and better out there.
Yeah. We went down to Austin, Texas, and they had a big green building movement there. We worked with a great builder, Bill Moore. And as they were just explaining the green building process, you know, precisely, Norm turns to me and he says, "We've been doing that for 20 years. You know, I mean, you know, everything that was sort of described, we sort of had this mindset to say, let's, you know, let's do products that are world-class and can last a little bit. Although I do have one question for you guys in the green industry. I've always had this one paradox sort of question, and that is it more green to have a product that would last a long time or to have one that would be last less time but is fast-growing in its replacement?
That's like the chicken and the egg.
I know.
It depends on the product, the project, and it really depends on the user.
Yeah.
Because people will use things differently, and for them, it's amazing how much it can depend on the user, whether it's a homeowner or it's a corporation.
I've always been in love with this Ipe, this ironwood for decking. In our New England climate, it's just spectacular. Well, it's not, unless it's we can prove that it's harvested perfectly because it's from, you know, the rainforest. Well, the alternative to that is material that doesn't last for half the time unless you go to some of the plastics. So though, that's sort of the paradox of some of the green stuff in my mind, you know.
It's like you said, every single project and every single piece of that project is just different, you know. Because sometimes, you know, it's bad to say, but it's just the pure reality of every project anybody works on. Sometimes most people can't afford that quote-unquote greenest thing out there.
That's right.
Or that greenest system or
That's
the
right.
technology or whatever the product is.
Yeah.
So you have to do the best you can, but there's always some little morsel of that project that to that particular owner is so important to them that that's where they're going to go for it all.
Yeah.
And then you do, and, you know, you take it one step at a time.
Yeah. We always try to teach people also, you know, I'm in the heating business and cooling business, but they should be thinking first and foremost about how to tighten their structures. It's you know, when we build with wood frame construction here and throw a couple of little bats of fiberglass in, you know, it's just we're always trying to push that open cell polyurethane foam up here that we like so much. You know?
We're doing that a lot. And the other thing is just this whole idea of conservation. I mean, we do some larger projects too. And if we can ever take something that was, you know, whether it was going to be 10,000 square feet or 3,000 square feet,
right.
if we can make it 2,700 square feet now, you know, that's like one of the biggest things you can do in the world, just like turning off a light bulb. You know, conservation is the best way to go.
And to the question of green, I always say to people, now, if you had $10,000 and you could put it somewhere, where would you put it? Would you put it into a CD or a passbook account for 2%? You know, what if you could put it into a building that could reduce your energy consumption by 25% and 30% for the rest of the building's life? It's sort of this quiet secret that no one's paying attention to because it's not being discussed among the investment professionals that you can actually have this kind of return on your investment by avoiding the cost of fuels.
Well, you're getting into long-term versus short-term thinking.
Yeah, I know.
And so most people that I encounter in my business, it's very short-term thinking.
Yep.
You know, what can I save today? Not 2 years from now or whatever.
Yeah.
The other question that I have is, what advice do you have for consumers or homeowners regarding their homes? What could they be doing today that would help them have a better home? I think we're already getting into that in terms of selecting materials. Another, why are we always using wood? This is one question. and what other materials that you've worked with?
I'm always smitten by the thermal mass of a concrete block or a structural integrated panel system. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That they hold their heat better and or they hold their cool better. And, you know, but the problem is, and the other thing about American windows, we have double-hung windows, which is probably the worst design windows.
Right.
You know, the meeting rail, you know, I have a little house right down on the most windy part of the water in New England. There's always 25 knots of breeze. And so I did the one thing where I did double sash locks just to bring that meeting rail together. And what a difference that makes, just because it's impossible to keep infiltration out without having decent windows.
So. Yeah, and that's the number one thing I tell everybody. If you're going to spend your money in one spot, spend it on your envelope.
That's right. Yeah.
And Richard, thank you so much for joining the Green Roundtable, and it's been a pleasure and an honor.
Well, keep watching, everybody. Thank you. Don't forget, we have thishouse.com, which is the website, which is you can sort of chase down some of the stuff we show on the show and This House magazine. So... thank you. Thanks for letting me visit with you a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. Give that contact information out again.
It's thisallhouse.com, and it's also This All House magazine. And in that, we sort of get a chance to do some stories that explain the how-to in a little more detail. But on the website, thisallhouse.com, a lot of people will say, oh, we saw this on the show. How do I get that information? And on it, there's a resource directory so you can work your way back based on what show you saw or do a search, and I think people are really happy when they find that.
And Richard, you could be reached if somebody wants to send you an email or something. Can you be reached through that?
Well, you know what? I got to tell you, my son signed me in for LinkedIn at 3 o'clock in the afternoon one day.
Oh, he did.
By about 6 o'clock, I said to my son, if you love me at all, please get me off this thing. And I don't want to hide from people. I had about 1,000 people saying, oh, I'm so glad I found you. I want to tell you about my kitchen faucet.
I hear you. Wow. Well, Richard, thank you.
But I'll be glad to come and visit with you anytime. So,
okay. Well, we may just invite you.
Yeah, we absolutely will invite you. It's been a pleasure. And thank you so much. And I'm going to now say it. Richard Trethewey.
You got it, baby.
All right. From This Old House, thank you so much. And
thank you,
we'll
Richard.
Have you on again. And
right,
when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with the Green Roundtable, starring Eric Koss and Frank Clemente. And we'll be right back.
Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And again, thank you to Richard Chathui. I said it again. Eric,
you're
proud of me.
Stop saying it.
I know. I like it. I'm going to go to a restaurant and say, I want the Chathui, but hold the mayo. Richard Chathui from This Old House, very, very good. I will have to have him on again. They've all been great. We've had, what, four of the stars so far?
Yeah,
or five.
Four of the guys from This Old House.
Yeah, and, very, very
we're
cool.
We're planning to have a couple more on, so.
Excellent.
A couple of more on, did you say?
Frank, go to your room. Okay. Now, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, it was Frank that, in the middle of everything, says, oh, do we go on a break? It wasn't Eric or myself. But we're still teaching Frank the art of production in radio. And anyway, okay, so...
So this is radio.
Yeah. People say I have a face for radio. What can I say? Although we are on TV, too, at breakradioshow.com. Now, Frank and Eric, you're going to talk about... What's the mystery topic you're going to talk about?
Well, the mystery topic is how to create energy-efficient housing and homes, which Eric is very good at, and I'll talk about how to use the outdoors to reduce your heat load on a home or a building.
Especially in the summer.
Absolutely.
You know, it does make sense to do that in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, it is hot, hot, hot. Was it 118 the other day, Eric?
I say at least.
It was hot. Were you out there working?
Just for a little bit in the morning, and it just scared me inside, so...
Oh, man. How do you do it as a builder?
Oh, it's tough. It's tough.
That's got to be hard, huh?
Whenever you can, you want to try to, you know, every time we start a project, the first thing we look at is, you know, we know it's going to start in the next few weeks in terms of construction. Or I shouldn't say that. When we get a design project and we say, okay, well, this is going to be in design in 6 months or 12 months, whatever it is. So the first thing we go to is, when does that start construction? Is it going to be in the summer? We always want it to start in, like, October, or, you know, if we can.
I believe
it. We want to get past those monsoons, have everything cool down. Then it gives us all winter and spring to kind of get something built, get it enclosed so we can hide inside for the summer.
Now, does it work out that way?
It never works out that way.
So you're out there in the heat a lot.
Yeah, we've got one that's going to start up in just a little bit, and, you know, it'll be in the heat, and that's just the reality of working in Phoenix. Granted, we talk to a lot of guys that are out here, you know, older trades, and they've migrated out here, you know, from back east. And the one thing they say is, well, yeah, it does stink working in the heat, but at least you get to work 12 months a year out here. You know, back in Chicago or Boston, there's a lot of trades guys. You know, if you do concrete in Boston, you're not working in December and January and February, most
interesting.
Likely.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're a carpenter, you hope you can find indoor work, you know, finish work, but you're not going to be framing much new out there in January. So
that's a good. How about air conditioning companies today, this summer? I mean, they're swamped.
I'm sure they all are. You know, everybody's AC breaks in the summer.
I know. I met two people just in the last 2 days. Their AC broke. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
I mean, oh, geez. Okay, back to Frank. All right, back to
no comment. I thought my comment is no comment.
No, but you're going to talk about your.
Oh
topic.
Yes. Okay, that's right. Now we're going to.
We still are on live on the air, Mr. Frank. Okay, that was Frank.
Well, how are we going to use trees and shrubs and lawns and synthetic lawns and things like that to reduce our operating costs of a home?
Yeah, we have a client that just put in, he had synthetic grass, just put in the new version. Apparently there is a version out there now that's not supposed to get nearly as hot on your feet that everybody is blocking
well,
out
that,
to.
That's very important because sometimes people advise that you should come out with a hose before you want to go sit on that.
Yeah.
And I think that's ridiculous.
Well, and that's why everyone, you know, a product like that, you really need to think about how you're going to use it. You know, if it's important for you to have kids out there in June or July in the middle of the afternoon playing soccer or things like that, you know, it may not be the product for you because it gets
but
hot.
But you know what? I just talked to a fellow who went to see one of my clients this morning, as a matter of fact, and he has synthetic lawn in his backyard, and his kids use it all the time. So I says, well, that's very interesting. You
as
know.
Long as you have shoes on, you're fine.
Well, I can see that it does get very hot, and certainly it's not a good thing when you're barefooted.
And, you know, and obviously it I haven't gotten into the makeup, the actual sort of, you know, almost chemistry behind the synthetic lawns. I know we had one client where we did look at, we tried to take their water bill and figure out, is this worth it? You know, we're going to save on water. It seems like a green thing to do. We know there's natural resources that are being used for it. And what we came up with, it seemed like the lawn would last about 20 years, and it seemed like it would be 10 to 12 years in water bills for that lawn to pay for itself. And that particular client decided not to. You know, we run into this a lot. Most people, 5 years or less, bam, they're ready to do it. It pays for itself quickly. 5 to 10 years, they may or may not. Almost everybody, unless they're really, it's something that's very important to them. Over a 10-year payback period, most people are kind of a little afraid.
Is that because a lot of people move within the 10 years?
Yeah, I think, you know, 10 years from now, you don't know. Are you going to have a college education to pay for? You know, a lot of people think they're going to stay in a house, but they know they could be gone. So that's kind of the scary aspect. But I do have to say there are a lot of people that are trying to do solar, even though it still has a, you know, a 10, 12-year payback. And they're finally, you know, getting their feet wet and doing it because they just feel like it's the right thing to do.
Well, but Eric, before you start to get into solar and putting all that equipment, don't you think in your experiences that if you have an efficient envelope to start out with and the proper orientation on a lot, that in itself, and of course the choice of materials that you're building with, that you're going to have really savings, and you're going to, it gives you this leverage, and you don't have to be, I mean, reduce maybe the equipment that you have to be buying.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I did a quick little lecture at the Build It Green conference a few months ago, and one of the things I didn't name the builder, but I kind of picked on him. There was a neighborhood with 200 houses in it, and they only built three types of houses. And I showed an aerial slide where they took this one house, and it had every single orientation, north, south, east, west, flipped, mirrored, every way you could do it. And that's one of the things I ask everybody in the room. Do you think the builder changed the amount or type of insulation on his west walls or not? The amount or type of glass that he used, or how much glass he put it, or where he put it? No, he didn't change any of those things. It's a cookie-cutter house. They're churning it out. And that's something, I mean, from the dawn of time, man, you know, found that cave to live in where, you know, it was good in the morning, it was good at night, it played with the sun. And, like, you know, you deal with it all the time, Frank. How we orient these things is just, it's just key and simple. And then bringing landscape into it takes it even further.
Right, and we can use, of course, trees are the major things that anchor a space. They create an anchorage to a space, and you can have well, I'm doing one right now where we're going to be shading a barbecue area. We're going to he has a putting green, and we're going to have trees around the putting green, and we're going to have some benches where people can sit and watch him play underneath the trees, and so it'll be cool. So you can use trees and shrubs for cooling, and you can take advantage of breezes. If you understand the direction of a breeze, you can put plants that precede the breeze before the air comes into the house. It cools the air down, and by the time you open your windows, it'll cool the inside. So there's a lot of very interesting strategies to use to reduce your heat load and also to provide indoor comfort.
And we're lucky out here because a lot of the trees, you know, we can put them on the west and get, you know, shade that really harsh western sun. But a lot of the desert trees out here, they're just not that tall. So we can really pack them in close to where we're at and still have open roof space for things like solar. You know, back east, you put a whole bunch of trees near your house and bam, you know, you're in the shade all day long except the winter. It's very hard to get some of the solar panels to really work how you want them to. So that's another, you know, nice piece about being in the desert.
One of the things, too, is reflected, called the albedo, you know, that process where you get reflections from glass, you know, from pool decking. You know, I have a project where it is facing west, and they want to enjoy the evening, and it's just heat is radiating out of
killer.
The materials. It's a killer deal. So, and that was happens when you put the pool so close to the house that you actually are creating a mirror to reflect all that heat. So if they have the space, I suggest move the pool away from your house and give yourself maybe 15 feet of lawn before you get to the pool.
Yeah, we're
so placement is important.
We're looking at we're doing one right now where we're lucky enough to take a guest house, and we're going to build a steel structure over the existing guest house. So we're basically basically creating a roof that's separate from the real roof.
Right.
We're going to cover that with solar panels. So we're going to get all this energy from the sun, and those solar panels in turn, which aren't actually touching the roof below, won't have any water issues, but they're actually going to put that entire guest house in shade now. So we'll be producing a lot of our own electricity. We're going to do a new envelope on the outside of that building, and then we're going to have it in shade for most of the summer. So it's going to be a really nice way to kind of tie a lot of those elements you're talking about together.
That is very clever. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with the Green Roundtable, of course, with Eric Toss and Frank Clementi. And I'm going to have a comment right back from our break about synthetic lawns. It'll be my only comment of the day regarding lawns, but it should be fun, and we'll be right back.
Is it important for you to develop a financial plan without the potential conflict associated with commission sales? As a fee-only financial planner, I am paid by you and only you, my client. I'm not compensated in any way by the recommendations I provide. Have you heard the phrase, people do not plan to fail, they fail to plan? My experience has shown that this is too often true when considering one's financial future. If you're ready to take action, call me, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, directly at 602-235-0336. We'll discuss your financial situation and review some small or perhaps large changes that will help you obtain the financial future you desire. Don't let the lack of a plan affect your family's financial future. Call me, Bob Berger, at 602-235-0336 for a free consultation. Again, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner, 602-235-0336.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the Green Roundtable starring Eric Koss and Frank Clementi. As promised, I have a little story about synthetic lawns. And you guys were saying that if you're going barefoot on it, a little kid, it might be sort of hot. Well, one time I saw this kid, I think it was at like Big Surf or Big Sur, you know, out here, I think it's called.
Right, the
no,
water
Big
park.
Surf. Yeah, the water park. And it was sad. It was really a sad thing. The little kid started from way, you know, like 50 feet away and barefoot walking on the sand. And it was murderously hot in the middle of July and running and was 5 feet from the water and decided he couldn't take it any longer. So he
jumps into the lawn.
No,
he went backwards.
He went back. I felt so sad for that little kid. And it was too far for me to pick him up. But the thing is that he was 5 feet from the water, but he said, oh, my God, he's burning and crying, and ran all the way back. He could have been in the water five feet.
If he would have, if he would have made it that extra 5 feet, he would have learned a really valuable lesson that day.
Exactly. Go for the water. Okay. So you got you have a comment on that.
Well,
was that you that was running? Okay.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah.
When I was five. Anyway, let's talk about lighting, natural lighting. Okay, how do we get natural lighting? Even in a garden, you can get natural lighting, which has to do with heat. You know, light and heat kind of go together. And so, Eric, talk about how you can create buildings or houses, you know, where you can use the lighting system of the sun to minimize your use of power, to be turning the lights on and off all the time.
Well, again, as you were talking about before, building orientation in roof overhangs and window placement. I mean, it's just that simple. Anybody that's, you know, considering doing a new project, you know, start there with those core basic ideas. And then you start throwing in the concept of how the sun moves throughout the day, where it's hitting you with orientation, and how that sunlight's actually going to bounce around, whether it's before it gets to your house, how it's going to bounce in, and once it gets inside of your house, how is it going to bounce around and what's it going to light up. There's a lot of different sort of strategies to use depending on your application and your actual site where you're at.
Now, does it change? I suspect it changes. Of course, summer, the sun's in a different position. Winter, so you just sort of calculate that, and that's part of your computations, I suspect.
Yeah, and it is a simple calc. And out here in Arizona, you know, it's a lot different when we look in, you know, back east, and you want, you know, as soon as it starts cooling off, you want to start letting that sun hit your glass, and by wintertime, you want to just have all of your glass completely filled with sunlight. Out here, you know, in the wintertime, you want a little bit of the sun to hit your glass,
well,
but
you
not
do.
A whole lot. You know, and then as the time goes on, you want to get rid of it. And it depends, you know, if you're doing a home where you've really designed it, you know, to maybe have a Trom wall, or you're looking at your flooring material to heat and things. If you're relying on that, which most houses typically don't when they're being retroed out here. So it's something to think about.
Well, if you talk about the average home that you see in a subdivision, you know, what I do, I use deciduous trees a lot. In other words, mm-hmm. that's where it sheds its leaves at certain times of the year, and it allows the sun to come in and warm the house. And I think that's very practical. And then, and of course, you can't beat it, because then the tree starts growing its leaves and it shades you during the summer. Mm-hmm. And so if you have windows, say, where that face that bring in light, you can use the tree to shade the glass during the summer and allow sunlight to come in the winter. So it's kind of like a movable shade, but it's organic.
Right. And, of course, I mean, there's lots of kind of products out there. We've, you know, retrofitted some houses with exterior, you know, screens, whether they're manual or automated. I mean, those things are great in the summer. There's lots of houses here in the valley that, you know, you get a house and it's on that golf course view, and by golly, we're going to put a whole bunch of glass floor to ceiling here, but it faces due west.
Yes.
But, you know, the clients are, it's going to happen no matter what. So exterior shades are just huge. If you can stop that sun in the summer before it hits your glass, that's just key.
Yeah, and you can't put trees in down the road there because you'd be right on the golf course.
Right. And that's like a little pet peeve of mine, too, is we've got all these beautiful desert trees, these Palo Verdes and these mesquites. When they're sort of kept upright and healthy, they're very open trees. And you can see through these trees. And there's a lot of mindset out here that if you put two or three trees, you know, beyond your view, that you've completely ruined the view. And that's not the case. They enhance the view, and you can see through these trees a little bit, and they're beautiful on their own right. So sometimes people get so caught up that got this view, nothing can block it. You need to ease up on that a little bit here and there.
Yeah, and I studied at the Desert Botanical Garden. One of the things that we do, we create what's known as guilds, and a guild is a tree with maybe a smaller tree and a smaller plants. That now we're getting off into another direction where you can create a space that has plants at below the canopy of a tree, and you can have a bench or seating area there, and you can have this whole area of maybe three or four trees and create an outdoor roofed area with trees and plants and have really a great natural outdoor patio.
Yeah, those nice, sometimes those nice, tight, intimate spaces are, you know, the most beautiful spaces.
And can you believe it? We're at the end of the show again. Eric,
really?
Yes, it is true, Mr. Frank.
He doesn't believe you.
No, I'm looking at the time. Really? And Kurt has given me the one-minute warning. Unlike NFL, that won't be around, is two-minute warning. Okay, Eric, how do people get in touch with you?
They can reach Cost Design and Build. They can reach us at 602-374-5757 or on the internet at costdb.com.
And
Frank Clementi at 602-540-3773.
Thank you so much, and we'll see everyone next month with the Green Roundtable. Of course, we'll see everyone tomorrow with our sports show, some special guests tomorrow. And, of course, a thank you to Richard Trethewey from This Old House. And we'll get him back on again. He was really delightful, really knowledgeable, and very pleasant.
For the show, you're batting around 400 now?
Yes,
is that what
true.
The average up to on that name?
I think so. Truly, I did that good. Okay, anyway, everyone have a great night. Go see the Phoenix Mercury tonight. They're playing the LA Sparks. And we'll see everyone tomorrow.